With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. This is your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number 18. Nicholas Anelka / Mario Lemina episode.
Moise Keane. Wasn't Moise Keane number
18? Moise Keane, yes. Keen. Come on, Sergio. Maybe 18 episodes in. You should know the joke is for not good players.
Listen, what if he gets it again?
I'm just really, yeah, exactly. I'm just trying to make it happen.
All right, we are recording same day as Juventus actually played a game, albeit a friendly against the third division side, but we've seen Andrea Pirlo's Juventus for the first time. And let me bring in the usual crew here of Sam Lopresti. Hello, Sam.
Howdy, Danny. Good to see you here.
Good to be here. We got Chucks. Hello, Chucks. Long time no talk.
Good evening. I hope everyone is doing well. And Nicolas Anelka. I never knew if that S was like a silent, the last S, Nicolas Anelka. But Le Sulk, not forgotten about.
As we discovered on your book chat episode of the podcast, your French is much better than I.
Still got a way to go.
Did Anelka even play the year that they loaned him?
A couple.
Like, did he
a couple
even...
of brief appearances.
Yeah, pretty sure he did. Just not, I doubt he scored, though.
I a few months ago, I think I wrote a piece about, like, the kind of, like, ranking all the free transfers that Juventus has had. And I'm pretty sure he played like 45 minutes or something. Yep. Overall, didn't score. He was actually the worst signing in my ranking.
And that voice you hear is Sergio Romero. Hello, Sergio.
Hey, fellas.
As we mentioned, Juventus has played a friendly. It's loan friendly before kickoff Sunday against Sampdoria and Turin. And as we saw, and what we'll start out this week's proceedings with, is a three-man defense. And as our good buddy Hunter wrote on the site last week, that the three-man defense is possibly the best thing Andrea Pirlo can do, especially at the beginning of the season, knowing that, as we were talking before we went on, I was the only one to stay up late night and actually watch the whole damn thing. What are you guys thinking that now that we've seen it for the first time, Andrea Pirlo is, at least for the beginning, going 3-5 or 3-4, whatever, and utilizing the wealth of defenders that Juventus has, at least in the center of the defense, to his advantage?
I'm really intrigued by what he's thinking and where he's leaning with this. I certainly think that with a three-man back, it's going to be a lot more solid defensively than it ever was under Maurizio Sarri. We could also be looking at a little bit more from Leonardo Bonucci, who, back when he was still at the peak of his powers, he was still dogged by that he's a three-man back specialist kind of a detraction. But with Pirlo seeming to be playing a lot more direct than Sarri, or really, really Allegri either, I could definitely see him sitting in the middle of a back three and start launching those passes over the top like he used to and making good use of those. But what intrigues me more is actually not the use of the back three, but how it affects everything ahead of it. Juan Cuadrado's played as a wing back before for Juventus and for a lot of his past clubs. Definitely can help with some of his less graceful defensive moments. But what really makes me wonder is the midfield. If you're really going with a two-man center midfield, that's not a lot of minutes to spread around to guys, and I'm going to be very interested to see who really becomes the regulars there. for Pirlo. Today we saw Weston McKennie, from what I was able to glean from highlights that I was able to see. Kid was everywhere. And, you know, just a lot, a big, huge bundle of energy, getting the ball and moving it really quickly. Rabiot seems to be picking up where he left off at the end of last season. It's going to be really interesting to see how those minutes are spread out and how the minutes up front are spread out and where everybody is going to be spread out position-wise up front. Because we saw, you know, we'll probably end up seeing Cristiano Ronaldo becoming more of a striker than he ever has been at the club level. And it's going to be interesting to see how he adapts to that. Frankly, I think that's better. I don't think that his play out on the wing is as advantageous anymore. So it'll be really interesting to see how, when Paulo Dybala gets healthy again, he'll be able to match up together, and what will happen if and when the number nine that Andrea Pirlo wants arrives. So overall, a lot of some interesting things to do, but really, I think a few more questions than answers. Just to, you know, here's your first look. Now we have to see how things actually come together.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same with you, Sam. I did not see the game. Frankly, I actually am embarrassed to say this, but I didn't actually know there was a game.
Shame.
Sorry.
Shame.
Shame. Shame. Shame.
I saw your post today, Danny, your initial reactions and observations post.
My late night writing special.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, whoops, sorry. So, yeah, shame on me for that. But, I mean, I did just reading through that post and just reading through the general, you know, comments of people and just, yeah, I mean, general kind of feedback from that game. I was able to glean kind of a general understanding of how that game went. And not to repeat too much of what Sam said, but I do want to address, well, first of all, one thing I want to address, which is the high press, you know, aspect of the game. You know, that's good. That's fine. I mean, I like that. I mean, a lot of people like just that high intensity offensively and defensively. You know, people like that kind of high press in your face thing. I think it's become a little bit stereotypically kind of it's become kind of a sexy thing to do, to, like, you know, a high press, or the same thing, the same way that, like, you know, after Pep with Barca, you know, tiki-taka was like the thing, you know, the thing to do. I think kind of high press is also similarly that defensively, like, the thing to do, because it shows, like, oh, people want to, like, get the ball back. People want to take the initiative. My only question with a high press is, like, the sustainability of it over the long run. And by that, I mean sustainability over an entire season for a team playing 1-2-3 competitions, being, you know, the Champions League, Serie A, and, of course, what's the other one? Coppa Italia. So, you know, if we're playing three competitions, I mean, I just generally wonder about the sustainability of a high press every single game, you know, 90 minutes full on. Because, you know, I'm reminded of Marcelo Bielsa, who is now Leeds United, who put up quite the spectacle yesterday against Liverpool. I didn't actually see the game. Yeah, I didn't see the game, but, like, I heard it was really quite something, which I just have to pick at him for this. But I know that Pepu is, like, reading that and just thinking, my God almighty, this is the atrocity of all these goals and, like, all these goals scored and conceded. But, you know, Bielsa was criticized a lot, especially with Bilbao, I remember, for, you know, okay, high press, but then he would have, like, the first 10-15 games of the season, fantastic stuff, you know, the first like quarter of the season, really, really fantastic stuff, and then you would just see the team slowly decline and, like, slowly run out of steam because of just the fact that, you know, that. And, I mean, Bielsa's next level, of course. His level of intensity of pressing is extremely high-level stuff. But still, I mean, that was a recurring theme with him. It's like his teams would just burn out over the track of the season because it just was unsustainable. Like, that level of defensive intensity was just unsustainable. So I kind of asked the same question for... Really, I ask the same question for any team. It's like, okay, is this going to be every single game, or is it just going to be like, you're going to, I don't know, kind of spread it over like the season, like, you know, a few games really high intensity and maybe against lesser opponents, kind of take it easy a little more. So that's my general question. You know, I like the romanticism of it, but I wonder, as always, I'm that guy at the party that wonders about the pragmatism and the sustainability of it.
Skeptical Chucks is back.
Main man.
Putting a damper on a 5-0 rumping of noted powerhouse, Novara, whatever, however that is pronounced.
One of the only teams around that's undefeated against Inter.
Really? Well, Inter are...
Their only season in Serie A, they did the double against Inter. It was great. It was wonderful to watch.
I think the most interesting thing is, and we mentioned it at a previous podcast, you know, with all those transfer rumors and whatnot, it was, you know, we all wondered, like, why are there no more rumors about Juventus trying to sign fullbacks? And it might be what we saw today, you know, that it might be that the three-man back line is probably going to be the way this team kind of sets up for the season. And if you do that, then you don't really need, like, many fullbacks, which is good because we don't have many fullbacks. But, yeah, just to kind of reiterate some of what Sam said also about, you know, the jostling of you know, the squad is going to be interesting to see, you know, who gets minutes where and how. Obviously, Dybala was not playing. He's still injured. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of like where he fits in that formation. I mean, there's a couple interesting things that, you know, can be seen as good. Obviously, with the caveat that it's a, you know, preseason game, it's against a Serie C. So, you know, let's not get carried away here, but, you know, a lot of positives. And the biggest one was probably McKinney, right? I mean, you know, spoiler for the column that's coming up next week, for, you know, power ranking the Juventus squad. But he was a guy that initially I had pegged as, you know, depth piece. Like, he's not going to be a huge part of the team. But, you know, maybe he actually does get, you know, a little bit more playing time. I mean, he looked pretty okay. I was actually kind of, like, pleasantly surprised with what he did.
In the parts that I saw, I was happy with watching Luca Pellegrini playing and being given a number that suggests that he's not going anywhere. He was out there wearing number 17, which is not a number that is usually given to somebody that they expect to, like, you know, 2 years ago when Moise Kean was around and we were all wondering if he was going to get loaned out again, then the squad numbers came out, he was given number 18. We were like, all right, I think that he'll stay now.
Yeah, he wasn't in the 40s.
Yeah.
Although Kulusevski is rocking 44 again, and I kind of love it. So
I wonder how much that has to do with the fact that Douglas Costa is still on the team.
That's true.
At the moment. That is one thing, you know, talking about the midfielders, one of the most recent transfer rumors that I've seen is a straight swap for Douglas Costa and Thiago Alcantara with Bayern, which would be really interesting, but also, again, throwing, if you're only going to be using two central mids in a game, you know, throws a big fish into the minutes pond. Unless Pirlo has, you know, some ideas about, you know, doing Allegri life morphs mid game. But Kulusevski, who, by the way, as I've mentioned this privately, but I'm staking him now. You, Danny, you have your large adult son. Sergio, you have your large adult son. Kulusevski is mine. Yes. I'm calling him right now.
I think you established that a few pods ago, but, you know, it's always good to reestablish your
ground. I claim this land.
Time to start learning Swedish, then.
Yeah, right.
Although he's hanging out with McKinney and Delic, so I think he might be part of the English-speaking contingent.
Also, with Kulusevski, I mean, to think about the stir it caused in Sweden when he was benched for Sweden's first game of the Nations League over the international break, to the point where the Swedish national team coach got really angry at the press there for asking him why he didn't play.
Yeah, Zlatan got really, he had a word or
and,
two.
And yeah, and Zlatan said
a word or
too,
two is kind, Chucks.
Yeah. Let's just put it like that.
You know, and he did look really great. He assisted on the goal that Cristiano Ronaldo scored in the first half during the friendly with a really nice 1-2 pass. you know, when you talk about the right backs on the team this, you know, this past season, you had Costa, who is pace, and you have Bernardeschi, who is more technique. But Kulusevski, I look at Kulusevski and I just see power. Like, whether he's moving forward or shooting or dribbling, there's just a power to him that is really, really, it's just, it's imposing to watch him play sometimes. And I'm really looking forward to him maybe, you know, taking that kind of trequartista position that Aaron Ramsey was in for most of the game today. See if they'll do that, or if that'll be where Dybala slots in when Dybala's healthy, who knows. But yeah, Kulusevski has me excited. Pellegrini has me, I'm really glad to see that we're going to be giving him a chance, because he's played very well for Cagliari last year. And yeah, I think that overall, the fact that some of these younger players, McKinney, Pellegrini, Kulusevski, are really getting some minutes is really encouraging to me.
Yeah, I guess there's kind of a directness to Kulusevski's play, which, you know, kind of comes back to our earlier point of Pirlo at least seemingly playing a very direct style of play with, you know, with attacking anyway. And defensively, if you think about it, because high press really is a very direct way of defending, because it's a proactive style of defending. Which, yeah, I mean, once again, I mean, is this permanent? Or is it permanent, or is it just kind of is he just trying things out right now? Because it's the eternal dilemma with friendly games of like, well, you don't want to glean too much from it because it is a friendly, but then again, friendlies are meant for experimentation. So, you know, you like to do some of it, but not too much. But then, yeah, it's a tricky balance.
Well, isn't that part of the, I guess, as Sergio's coined it, kind of the fun of Pirlo being the manager now, is that we have nothing to go off of. So we don't know if he's experimenting. We don't know if this is his plan and that's what we're going to see, you know, in January, February, whatever. And that's what had me really intrigued about this friendly, is just we finally have something to go off of rather than one or two interviews and, you know, one of those interviews being something on Instagram Live with one of his buddies. So I think that's for me what this friendly was all about. We just have ideas now of what Pirlo might, and let me emphasize might, since it's a friendly and it was against, you know, a third division team, of where Pirlo might, you know, is looking at where he could take this team, rather than, you know, as compared to Juventus's last coach, we knew what he wanted to do. Obviously he couldn't do it, but now we have now we have something for Pirlo at least to kind of be like, okay, here's 90 minutes of a foundation. Who knows if it will be here in October, but it's something to call. Yeah. And that's more than we could say a couple of hours ago.
Yeah, you call it fun. I call it pure angst.
Pure. I think Danny mentioned it in his, you know, recap of the game, but I think something huge too is Marco Piaca, my guy, my dude, is out there scoring. I mean, you know, we're out here trying to get a number nine, and you know, we've had him all along. This long winding road of his Juventus career is going to end.
Allegri did use him as a seconda punta for a while.
Yeah. It's. I mean, listen, why not? I mean, let's try him out there. I think he scored on the friendly and he scored against the under 23. So, I mean, that's two goals, two games. Can't really ask anything more of him.
It's going to be interesting, especially, you know, based on everything that I'm hearing, Luis Suarez is starting to really test the patience of the Juventus front office, and we'll see if that happens. Arek Milik looks like he's headed from Napoli to Roma, whether that makes the Dzeko stuff come loose and at least make him a placeholder until finances start to stabilize after COVID is, if and when COVID ever gets into the rearview mirror. That's the one thing that Pirlo made very, very clear at the end of this game, was he wanted that striker and he wanted him quickly.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So indeed, as you just mentioned, you know, Pirlo has now made it very explicitly clear that he wants slash needs very much a center forward, which is just such a strange situation how he got into this. Yeah, how he got into this situation. It's just very strange. I mean, we had Mandzukic and Higuain, and then Mandzukic kind of, you know, poof, disappears, much against everybody's will. And then now Higuain, I still think Higuain has like one good season left in him, but looks like he's basically gone now, which, well, whatever. What are you going to do? So, you know, the question is, well, what if we don't get a striker after, what is it, October 3rd, was it? I forget. Fifth, right. Yeah, I think it was fifth or third. So, yeah, after fifth, what if we don't get a striker then? A decent striker? Looks like Giroud is not happening. Looks like Suarez is a question mark as well. So, yeah, what if? And I think that is a legitimate possibility that, in this case, Pirlo has to prepare for. And, I mean, are we going to go the route of the Spanish national team of not playing a center forward for... I mean, how long was it that Fabregas was the center forward? For quite a while, actually. So, I mean, are we going to go that route of like a strikerless formation of kind of Dybala, kind of Ronaldo, kind of Marco Piazza as center forward? I mean, hell, even Aaron Ramsey, put him in center forward? I mean, again, a la Spain did with Fabregas, just putting him in center forward. But, I mean, I think it's a legitimate possibility that, I mean, I'm starting to... I'm starting to entertain that reality of not having a legitimate center forward or a real wild card, which is promoting a Primavera striker. But I mean, that's a real wild card.
Which, to be honest, and you know, judging from, again, the one friendly we have info about, maybe we just don't really get a striker because maybe you just don't need one at this point. Because if you're going to play with two guys at the top with no real wingers per se, that means that, you know, Ronaldo has to fit in somewhere up there, and Dybala would probably too. You have Kulusevski, you have Costa, you have Bernardeschi, you have a lot of guys that kind of, you know, are kind of like left in no man's land. And I mean, I wouldn't hate it if our two, you know, nominal strikers were Dybala and Ronaldo. I think his first season with the club for Dybala, he kind of played that second striker role with Mario Mandzukic at the time. And he did it pretty well. I wouldn't be upset at that at all, especially with the, you know, Suarez thing, kind of like getting muddy there for a second and, you know, not really being like a lot of options out there, with the exception of, you know, bringing Moise Kean back, which is the only move that I would support fully support. But, you know, I don't know, it's going to be interesting, especially with the formation that we saw today. I don't know if you really need a striker like Chucks was mentioning.
Well, I mean, I think if you're going to go strikerless, then I mean, to me, I think you're going to need two things. You're going to need very 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 direct wingers who really cut inside. And you're going to need midfield runners from deep, and consistently like midfield runners, because someone has to make up that space there that's not there. Like someone has to kind of create that presence that's not there when there's no center forward. So, I mean, do we have that? Well, you know, just as we said with Kulusevski, okay, that could work indeed. Marco Piazza, that could work. Douglas Costa, I mean, I don't know if he doesn't injure himself tying his shoelaces, then maybe. But also, yeah, I mean, from midfield now you have McKennie. That's also real energy and engine there. So,
and he and McKennie is a hell of a header of the ball.
Yeah,
from everything that I've seen of him, his aerial ability is fantastic.
Well, maybe McKennie can tie Douglas Costa's to shoelaces for him, so he doesn't get injured.
As intriguing as that, like, purely strikerless idea is, you know, for years there's been that school of thought that the pure prima punta number nine is dying out in the game. But I guarantee you, every coach, no matter how progressive that coach might be, will tell you that every team needs at least one guy, you know, be it, you know, I mean, if you look at Duvan Zapata in Atalanta, like, he's, you know, that guy who will get in and abuse a guy in the air when you really need it. or just a guy to throw on late to be able to like just aim headers at if it's desperation time. The kind of guy I kind of think of it as like Andreas Cornelius, you know, that just the huge dude who can go up for the balls that no one else can. Obviously, in our case, Ronaldo also a fantastic header of the ball, so you have that. But I frankly wouldn't be opposed to putting Mario Mandzukic back on the team, just being like, yo, he is a free agent. Be like, hey, Mario, sorry. but yeah, I think we'll end up with something because Pirlo wants it that badly. And I also just think from a squad building standpoint, I mean, then again, Fabio Paratici, squad building has never been his strong suit, but you know, you want at least one of those guys.
Yeah, I agree. And also, I mean, I remember reading something on zonal marking, probably saying, you know, the death of the number nine, the death of the poacher striker. And, you know, I mean, I think the point he was making was like, there is not a need, or there's no demand, I should say, for the striker that does only one thing, which is kind of ironic. There's basically no demand for a striker that only scores goals, which is indeed kind of a perverse irony there. But, you know, there's a demand now for, if you're going to be a striker, if you're going to be a center forward, you have to be able to pass. You have to be able to be a good header. You have to have good hold up play. You have to be able to drift out to the wings, drop deep, good passer, as I said, and so on. So, I mean, I think most teams still do want a center forward, just a center forward that kind of participates in play and does more stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's a very 2020 kind of thing of like a very kind of, you know, futuristic kind of forward thinking idea of like, well, we're not going to play with strikers, we're just going to have like a fluid, like total football kind of thing, which, you know, whatever, at the end of the day, if it works, fine, but like, you know, there has to be some kind of deliberate thought to it, not just kind of like, well, kind of accidentally, since we don't have strikers, since we messed up in the transfer window, well, let's just not play any strikers then. Which goes back to the point I've been making about Andrea Pirlo and, you know, how attached is he to like a system of play or like a certain style of play or of coaching, I should say. You know, how attached is he to it? Is he really, which I don't think he is, but is he really a systems coach, or is he just today this works, tomorrow, next week that will work, so we'll go between that. Obviously, that remains to be seen because we've only had a grand total sample size of one friendly to go off.
Also does make you think competition to competition how Pirlo might work things, because you know, teams that play a three-man back line do not have the greatest of track records in Europe. I can't remember the last time a three-man back is their main formation won the Champions League.
I guess Europa League,
yeah, but the Europa League, but that's a step down.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Conte almost won it, so like, you know.
You know, and yeah, like Conte almost won the Europa League in his last year with us in, you know, this past summer. But, you know, teams with a three-man back line don't have that kind of track record in Europe. It was one of the big reasons that Max Allegri changed up. You know, that big, huge game against Olympiacos. He finally moved off the 3-5-2. And so it'll be interesting to see what he deploys continentally as opposed to what he has in Italy, and if he has different ideas for that.
All right, let's steer things in a little bit of different direction here. Obviously, we've been talking about the team as a whole, but besides the given names, are there one or two players that you guys are looking at as to really like, okay, this is a reason for me to be interested in Juventus this season, even though, you know, I'm going to be interested in Juventus regardless because I've been watching them and facepalming at them for, you know, X amount of years.
First one I'll say is, it's a little bit of a obvious answer, but I'll say McKinney, and not because of the whole, okay, he's the first American, but just because...
You American Homer, you.
Which is ironic, because I'm not even... I'm the furthest thing from American.
That's but, the joke, Chuck.
Yeah. So it's Sunday, lads. I'm thinking about how I'm back to work tomorrow, you know? I'm thinking, ooh, back to the office. But so yeah, McKinney, kind of for two reasons. One is that, you know, I think we can all agree that he's technically the replacement for Matuidi, the younger and kind of more, you know, enthusiastic. I mean, okay, Matuidi was very energetic, but, you know, just the younger replacement now for Matuidi. And Matuidi, I mean, he played a very, very important role for Juventus, and one that, frankly, I don't think people have appreciated enough. But, yeah, I mean, he played a very, very important role for both Allegri and Sarri. So there's, you know, there's that reason. And then also just because he's, I think it's the first time in a while that we've made that this type of signing, A, like a, you know, a very young, energetic midfield signing, but also B, just kind of the first time in a while we've made this low-key, cheap, really, midfield transfer. I mean, the last few years we've gone for pretty big blockbuster moves. I mean, obviously Ronaldo, you know, Kulusevski, he was pretty pricey, I'll say. While Ramsey was just expensive just because of salary. So. And of course, it was Higuain from many years ago. De Ligt, obviously, huge, huge.
I was waiting for you to remember that one.
You know, I mean, save the best for last.
Now the bias is coming out.
Yeah. I kind of wanted to, like, you know, sneak it in. What is it the kids these days say? Slide it into the DMs.
the kids. as somebody still in their 20s saying kids, Chucks, I don't know what.
Kid you not. I learned that term only a year and a half ago. Like, honest to God, like, only a year and a half ago.
You're not much of a you know, a Twitter or Instagram kind of.
No. I mean, I barely have Facebook, and then really LinkedIn. I'm most on LinkedIn and Quora, which are sort of social media, sort of not. But anyway, so, you know, I think generally we've just been making a lot of blockbuster moves, which it doesn't actually sit very well with me, because I think it really does signal a shift in the priorities of Juventus, kind of the ethos of Juventus. I don't know, because, like, in the early days of when I was a Juve fan, it was almost exclusively, like, low-key deals. It was the Khedira, you know, on the free from Real Madrid. It was the Pogba, which is like, ooh, who's this guy, you know? It was those types of low-key deals. And I feel like Weston McKennie is that type of deal for the first time in a while, you know? So that's why I'm kind of, yeah, interested or curious about him. And then, before answering this, I had a different answer, but I'm going to change it kind of mid-thought. I'm going to say Kulusevski, after all, just after kind of those tactical points I brought up of, you know, if it happens that we have a strikerless formation, then direct wingers are going to be crucial. And indeed, he does seem to be one of, well, does sound like he is, you know, one of the more direct wingers that we could have. And sorry, Douglas Costa, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's I've reached kind of a boiling point with him, man. I'm just like, bro, this is, like, absurd. Like, imagine if I were absent that much from my job. I mean, come on. Like, come on, man. But, and yeah, Bernardeschi, I mean, he's more, you know, Bernardeschi, the more I think of it, the more he kind of reminds you of, like, a Dirk Kuyt, the Dutchman, another Dutchman, who was, like, I mean, he was a winger, but he was, like, a functional winger that was there so that everybody else could do, like, the, you know, more the flair players could have the space. So, yeah, the new Dirk Kuyt. But, yeah, so I'll say Kulusevski and McKennie. So, you know, let's see what happens.
I'm looking first and foremost at Merad Demiral, especially these early points of the year where, you know, we're not going to have Matthijs de Ligt until end of October at the most optimistic. Probably more closer to Thanksgiving. His ability to jump into the back line, wherever, whatever form it takes and wherever he gets put into, is going to be really, really critical. And he's going to have to get in there, because you know, Chiellini, who by some miracle has suddenly jumped back in and been King Kong again these couple of games that we saw, the game that he played against Holland in the UEFA Nations League and this game today. Like, you know, after all that time, you know, first the knee and then the leg injuries, which I always had a fear that something like that would happen to him after he was done with, came back from the knee, because, you know, when you have a knee injury like that, your muscles are always compensating a little bit because your body is still not used to being able to work properly again. And for a guy with that history of leg injuries like Chiellini has, I was waiting for that, for him to get wiped out by those for once he came back from the knee. He's a guy that is going to need his minutes managed. You know, the last year under Allegri, he didn't often play two games a week when there were two games a week. You know, Demiral's going to have to step up. He's going to have to pair up with Bonucci and or both of them. And he's going to really have to show that the form that he was showing before he got hurt is what we're going to have. Because if we do, then the defense becomes so much less of an issue. And I'm also really, really, I want to see whether or not this is the year that Rodrigo Bentancur goes from really going, like really rising to there. Like, he's so close. He is this close to being that true world-class mid. And, you know, he's been developing so well for the last couple of years. I really, really want to see whether or not he's going to take that last step and be that elite guy in the midfield that I think all four of us here think that he has in him. Because if he takes that next step, the entire team takes that next step. He's got it in him. He's got everything. We've seen it so many times. Now the question becomes, does he put it all together this year and instead of being like a really good B+, become an A player?
Absolutely. I actually, building off on what you were saying, I'm actually really interested to see the midfield as a whole, just as a unit, because we all know that, you know, Rabiot finished the season really well. From what we've seen in friendlies and whatnot, it seems like, you know, he's still kind of like that guy. So if you take a guy like Rabiot, take a guy like Bentancur, if he takes the next step, and then you add the third part of that equation, which is Arthur, the new guy, the new signee, which, you know, if that guy actually comes in and develops and is a solid player, suddenly your weak link, quote unquote, which was the midfield, is looking pretty damn solid. Like, it's looking really, really well. So I'm just really interested in seeing how that midfield kind of keeps growing, keeps progressing. That they're all young guys too. So, you know, if you know, they manage to kind of work well together, we might be looking at, you know, the midfield for Juventus for the next 4 or 5 seasons, you know. And I think especially in that area, which has been pretty hit or miss for the last few seasons, to finally have that like settled, I think it's going to be really interesting to see. And listen, there are worse coaches to have than, you know, Andrea Pirlo for that young midfield. You know, I think he's going to be like a great influence on those guys. And I think they definitely have a chance to, you know, turn something that we all kind of considered a weakness for this team into a real strength.
Yeah, one of the things that stood out for me both before the friendly against Novara and then during the friendly was in the warm-up and then in the cooling break, Andrea Pirlo was singling out Weston McKennie and Adrian Rabiot and really kind of, you know, talking to them personally about what they needed to do. And, you know, obviously every coach does that, but, you know, these are two, and especially in McKennie's case, two young midfielders who are obviously, you know, trying to figure out a new system. But Pirlo was definitely just working with them exclusively as the other players talked about how the match was progressing. And I think if, you know, like Sergio said, if you're a midfielder and you've got that former midfielder as your coach, at the very least, he's explaining what he knows about the position to you. And the goal is that they absorb at least part of it and can execute it to the best of their ability. And if, like we've been saying, the caveat is that this is a third division opponent, but if we see what Rabiot and McKinney did in that friendly, and that's what they do more often than not, and, you know, Rabiot looked a lot like he did post-restart against Navarra, then, I mean, yeah, I'm definitely along the same lines of you guys thinking, or of Sergio, thinking that the midfield isn't as much of a black hole as it's been in recent years, and maybe not the black hole of death like, you know, we remember pre-title run days of Chucks will laugh about this, of Momo Sissoko and others, but or Felipe Melo and Momo Sissoko.
Felipe Melo.
Yeah.
Hassan Salihamidzic, wasn't he in there at some point?
Yeah. less said, the better.
But we'll start our Twitter questions going kind of off what we were just talking about, or Sergio was talking about, from friend of the pod, David Desberg at the True ROAC. Given this squad in its current state, what part of it could be an aspect of the squad or position group as a whole excites you, and which gives you the most fear? And I think Chucks is going to be Mr. Optimism and say that Andrea Pirlo is the thing that gives him the most hope.
Well, you put me on the spot there. So, yeah, I mean, clearly, yes. And I generally say this lovingly. I mean, as a fan and as someone that has the best interests of the team very much at heart. But yes, I mean, the general managerial situation, just concerns me quite seriously. Once again, just kind of the lack of identity, just the fact that this is a pure, I mean, I just feel like this is such a wild card option to go for Pirlo as a coach. And I mean, I've mentioned this 100 times, just how I feel like there's still just a lack of planning, strategic planning at the club at the moment. And I don't like that. I don't like that at all. So yes, I'm beating a dead horse here. I've mentioned my thoughts about that many times. Most optimism, I am going to say, just because of curiosity, the midfield. I was going to say the defense. Well, I think the defense is actually, I don't know, it's a strange kind of back and forth thing, because, I mean, our defense last year, or defensively last year, we broke all kinds of records, but the wrong records. So we conceded way too many goals. But ironically, I think our defensive situation, especially center backs, I mean, we're really good. So, you know, that tells me it's just something about the defensive structure of the unit, of the team, because defense starts from the front. I mean, it's cliche, but it's true. Defense starts from the front. That said, yeah, most optimism / curiosity, really, the midfield. Just with, okay, will Ramsey have a season of redemption? I should have mentioned him, actually. Maybe I should have. Yeah, no. But yeah, will Ramsey have some kind of redemption this year? And yeah, with Rabiot ending last season very, very strongly, will he continue that? Of course, McKennie, that kind of gives you that defensive solidity. I think if McKennie is as good as we hope he could be, plus Rabiot, who hopefully will continue his form, that would give you really that defensive solidity in midfield, which probably was a large reason that we conceded a lot of goals last year. So, yeah, let's bring it on.
Yeah, I think that when it comes to most intriguing, most optimism, I think the midfield does kind of, you know, fit that, I think, for all of us, because we've seen what could be going down and it's intriguing and we want to see where it goes. Most anxiety for me remains, even in spite of what Sergio was talking about before, is the fullback / wingback contingent, which I think is still lacking in manpower first and foremost. But also, you know, there needs to be a performance jump from that spot, because they didn't offer a whole lot last year, you know, Cuadrado's best games aside. You know, I have a lot of faith in Pellegrini. I think that he can be really good if given the chance. But Alexandro was up and down last year, needs to really give some proving to show that he was the guy that we signed still. And there's no one on the right. I mean, if you're going to play Danilo in a back three like you did today, and that probably was just because there just weren't enough guys available to go. You know, Demiral was probably, I believe he was on international duty with Turkey. He was probably just back. Delict, obviously. I don't know why Rugani. Well, did Rugani play in the second half?
Demiral and Rugani both played in the second half.
Both played the second half. So that was probably a manpower.
Danilo Rugani to you.
That's right.
That's right. Yes. But, you know, if there's a point where Danilo were to play center back, that leaves you with Juan and maybe Mattia De Ciglio, if he still exists in a Juventus uniform
by the
transfer window ends.
Who knows?
Which we don't know. You know, he kind of feels like he's coming out of a Stephen King novel nowadays where he just like pop, where like he'll float in and be like, ooh, and then he'll go away. We haven't had somebody wearing the number 2 shirt for 2 years. What are you talking about, Cristiano? I think there needs to be more depth in that area, regardless of whether we play, they're played as wingbacks or as standard fullbacks. And an upgrade wouldn't hurt. You know, I've got my fingers crossed with that group.
I think, you know, I already, you know, mentioned the midfield and I don't want to reiterate that, but, you know, I'm actually really, really interested in seeing our forward line or attackers because there's so much quality there, but it's kind of like a mismatch. Like they still out there, you know, we already talked about, you know, they're still out there looking for a number 9. You know, you have Cristiano Ronaldo, you have Dybala, you have Costa, you have Bernardeschi, you have now Kulusevski. You have so many guys there. And it just, it feels like the ingredients are there to have a really, really good, you know, forward line. But they're going to have to figure out how to make it work. And I think that that's going to be just really, really interesting to see whether or not, you know, Dybala goes back to being kind of like a false 9-ish type of player. A second striker, does he play, you know, in the hole behind 2 strikers? I mean, who knows? It's going to be interesting. And if you do play with wing backs, then does that mean that, you know, Bernardeschi is now a wing back, or, you know, who, like Douglas Costa maybe? I mean, it's just going to be interesting. There's a lot of moving elements, a lot of, you know, things to see. It's going to be interesting to see if they can actually develop them and put them in the best situation so that they can be the best players they can be, because they have talent. They are talented. We all know that. They just have to, you know, be put in the best position to succeed.
Funny that you mentioned the strikers, Sergio, because that leads right into our next Twitter question from at Jose C. Torres. 4-2-3-1 is the only formation that fits Ronaldo, Dybala, Kulusevski, and a potential number 9 without playing one of them out of position. Do you think we'll see it played often? And if not, who ends up being the odd man out most often? Kulusevski is the obvious candidate, but he's more flexible than Paulo Dybala.
If I may take that one first again. I think 4-2-3-1, I mean, I have nothing against that formation in principle, but 4-2-3-1 with Dybala, Kulusevski, Ronaldo, and a potential number 9 is extremely top-heavy. I'll play it against like Coton or something, or against I don't know who promoted again. I forget which teams. I should know that. But I remember Coton was one. Benevento. I knew it was a B. I knew it was a B. Yeah, if we play like a Benevento or Coton or something, sure. But I mean, I don't know about playing that against Inter or Milan, who are looking really, really good actually this year. So yeah, I'm very reluctant to put a team like that, a lineup like that, especially because there were already issues, you know, last year with just the lack of balance from the offensive players in terms of their defensive contributions. Yeah, a little reluctant about that.
With the right 2 midfielders in a double pivot, it could work. And it could even work against higher level competition. That being said, I don't see it being a part of Pirlo's plan, at least not right now. He could surprise us, because basically anything he's going to do right now is going to be something of a surprise. I don't see it being a regular thing. I certainly don't, certainly not like the 17-18 season. It could, as for who might be the odd man out, it'll really depend. You know, the only guy that's, you know, obviously going to be penciled in there is Ronaldo. Everything else can be really fluid, but, you know, Kulusevski, I think Kulusevski would play more of a role in the hole, whereas Dybala can definitely play either in the hole or as a second striker. So, yeah, it's, I think whoever comes up along with Ronaldo and Dybala is going to be a bit of a revolving door, that third attacker, whoever it is. I think Ronaldo and Dybala are going to get the majority of those minutes, and whoever is up with them is going to kind of switch based on the game.
We'll wrap things up on this one from @J_M_FeelReal. And I hope I said that right. Optimistic case for this season. Chucks, go.
Man, you are, I'm the man of happiness and optimism today, aren't I? I mean, optimistic or realistic? Well, no. Anyway, I'll take optimistic. Optimistic case would be winning the league. Basically, just a little caveat here. Saying that that is the optimistic case means that I am not sure that this will happen, or would be pleasantly surprised if this were to happen. So anyway, optimistic case, winning the league, quarterfinal of the Champions League, and semifinal of the Coppa Italia. Optimistic case.
I love that even in an optimistic scenario, Chucks cannot bring himself to have the team pass the quarterfinals of the Champions League. It's optimism. Optimistically, we win the treble. That'd be like, that'd be great. That'd be awesome. Like, that's the optimistic world of view, you know. But yeah, I think it's more likely than not that they will probably mount a good challenge for the league. They're still the best team in Italy, despite the, you know, the fact that AC Milan is better now, that Inter is going to have, you know, Arturo Vidal now, so they're going to be, you know, they're going to be there too.
We don't want to talk about that. That makes me sad.
Yeah, it's a bummer. It really is. But, you know, I mean, he's going to come in there and probably help them out, and, you know, they're going to be right there. But even so, Juventus is still the best team in the country, so they should win the league. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be just interesting to see, especially how they gauge the success of the club, what is expected of Pirlo in year one. That's going to be tricky to decide.
I think best case scenario for me is the absolute mixing optimism with realism as best as you can. Best case scenario for me is a comfortable Serie A title defense, a Coppa Italia win, and to edge this into the optimistic portion, semifinals Champions League. I think it can happen if everything goes right. I think that to me is the most optimistic that you can get out of me.
Optimism and realism, I like that, by the way.
Yeah.
So if you morph those two together, what would it be called?
Life.
Well done. I can't talk that.
All right. Let's end it on that note. All right. Thank you all for your Twitter questions. Really appreciate it. We had a lot of good ones and kind of had to whittle it down to a couple here since we're running on about an hour or so. Thank you. As always, you can submit your Twitter questions to us at Juventus Nation. I want to say thank you all for listening, as always. If you have a chance before the season gets going and we bombard you with article after article, you can listen to the book chat I had with Chucks about his upcoming book, You Say Soccer, I Say Football, which basically, as I mentioned on the podcast, kind of defines Chucks and I friendship. I call it soccer, he calls it football. So I just want to mention real quick before we sign off, wildfires have been ravaging the west coast of the United States, and especially for my area of Southern Oregon in Jackson County. Throughout the state, it's been bad, but it's bad here, knowing that two towns directly to the south of me have been ravaged by a fire that happened earlier this week, actually on the same day that Chuck's and I recorded the book chat. If you want to donate, it would very much be appreciated. Thankfully, I am okay. Let me just say that right now. I'm okay. I never had to evacuate. But you never know what can happen. You can donate at United Way of Jackson County. You can also donate to the Red Cross. There are also I have lost count of how many other GoFundMe or organizations locally that have been taking donations, be it clothes or financial. So, if you just search Google or Twitter, it's out there. So I just wanted to put, Sam mentioned before we hit record that I could give a shout out to Jackson County and let everybody know that I'm okay. So that is me taking advantage of said opportunity. Plugs, as usual, you can listen to us on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can listen to us on Spotify and Google Podcasts. As always, as I mentioned before, you can follow us on social media. At Juventus Nation is the Twitter account. We will suddenly become very active starting this weekend. So for Sam and for Mr. Author Chucks and for Sergio Romero, this is Danny saying thank you very much for listening. Especially during these tough times, stay safe out there, and we will talk to you after a Juventus game again next week.